This podcast is proudly brought to you by the Breath Team at the Wallyarn Respiratory Centre at the Telethon Kids Institute in Perth, Western Australia. We would like to acknowledge the Whadjuk Noongar people, the traditional custodians of the lands where we live, and pay our respects to elders past and present. Today, you will hear from two experts on the topic of lung health in First Nations children, improving outcomes through culturally secure care, specifically management of chronic wet cough, protracted bacterial bronchitis, and bronchiectasis. Our first expert is Shakira Brahim-Koppen. Shakira is a Nyamal woman from Yari country and also a mum. Shakira has a lived experience with respiratory disease in children. Later, you're going to hear from Associate Professor Andre Schultz. Andre is a paediatric respiratory physician who is passionate about improving respiratory health outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. The podcast is hosted by Dr. Nicola Ball. Nicola is a doctor who has spent a few years working in paediatrics. In Western Australia, the preferred term for First Nations is Aboriginal. We acknowledge Torres Strait Islander people live in Western Australia. However, the Aboriginal people are the traditional custodians of the lands that make up our state, and hence, out of respect, you might hear our presenters use Aboriginal to refer to Western Australia's First Nations.
Hi, Shakira. So nice to meet you. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
How are you going?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very well. Shakira, can you start by telling me a bit about yourself?
So I'm a Nyamal woman from the Pilbara. I have two children. I recently moved to Perth about a year ago. One of my little ones has the sickness. Recently had to come to hospital, but yeah, she's doing great now.
She's doing good now?
Yeah.
Good. How old are your kids?
One just turned 8 and the other one is 4.
Lovely. I'm hoping you could help me answer some questions I have about how I can help my Aboriginal patients in the hospital.
Yeah, that's good.
I guess my first question, sometimes I worry that I don't know how to help my Aboriginal patients and I get worried about causing offence. And sometimes it's a bit hard to get an idea about what's going on for the child. Is there anything I can do to get a better idea about what's going on for the families?
It can be tricky for a lot of different reasons. If there is a common sickness like wet cough, families might think it's normal or they can't notice it because everyone is coughing. So families might tell you that their child doesn't have a cough. If they don't realize it's serious, also like cultural barriers might make yarning really hard between Aboriginal families and doctors.
You mentioned yarning. What is that?
So yarning is like sitting, having a little chat with the patients, talking and asking them a bit about themselves, and they'll probably ask you a bit of questions before actually getting into the conversation.
Okay. Yeah. So kind of taking your time and getting to know one another rather than just jumping into the medical stuff.
Yeah.
Shakira, can you tell me a bit about how Aboriginal families look at health and how that might be different?
So for our mob, health is not just physical. If a child is sick, it can also affect like the whole family. So health is about physical, spiritual, and cultural things.
Okay. How does the family work? Is it just your immediate family or a bigger family?
Not just immediate. It's more bigger. So like auntie can care for so many nieces and nephews, grandmother. So it's not just your immediate family, it's the extended family. So we class that pretty much as your immediate family.
Okay. Because I do sometimes see Nana looking after Bub and different things.
Yeah, you will get that a lot anywhere you go. A lot of grandparents do care for like a lot of kids. It's not just one and their own grandkids. It could be like other grannies, nieces, nephews.
I know there's lots of different Aboriginal groups around Australia.
So there are over 280 Aboriginal communities in Western Australia. each of them have their own culture and languages. They're a bit like different countries. There are also a lot of different cultural stuff. So you got to realize not all Aboriginal people are the same. So like, for instance, if you was to ask me something about Noongar country, I couldn't answer it because I'm not a Noongar and I'm not from here, so I couldn't give you an answer for it.
Yeah. So you can't speak for everyone, of course.
So I'd only speak for my own people. Yeah.
How can I show respect when I'm yarning with families?
So if you're meeting an Aboriginal family for the first time, maybe like introducing yourself and explaining what you do just in case the family's not sure what your role is. Let's say you're a respiratory specialist. Tell the family that you are a kid's lung doctor and that you help kids that have sick lungs and help them breathe better. Just keep it simple. Many Aboriginal people like to make connections with where you are from and where they are from. So, like, even your family name is a way to connect where you belong. We like to share where we are from and who our mob are. So just, like, start your conversation with a yarn rather than just jumping into medical jargon.
So when I meet a family for the first time, could I ask them who their mob is?
Yeah, you can. So if you was to ask me, and I'd say I'm from the Pril Brahma with the Nyamal people.
Yeah, so what about me? Should I also share a bit about where I'm from?
Yes, it's good so that they know who you are and where you're from, what you're doing here.
Yeah, that sounds like a good way to start off.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. Can we talk a bit about body language? Because sometimes I notice that my Aboriginal patients don't want to make eye contact.
Yeah, so eye contact during conversations can be a bit disrespectful. If families aren't looking at you, it can mean a sign of respect, but you got to realize they are listening to you. Sometimes it's a good thing to stand on the side of the person while speaking. If you're standing straight at them, they could be a bit scared with that body language.
When we're standing side on, it's a bit less confrontational.
Yep.
I also worry about when we're going on our ward round and it's a big group of doctors. I think that's pretty intimidating. Is it better just for one person to go in?
Yeah, so I think that's another good example. Don't all go and speak to the patient. Just one of yous go and start chatting because it could be overwhelming seeing too many doctors together and speaking.
Absolutely.
When doctors are all speaking amongst each other and talking high medical jargon and the patients are near you, always remember it's good to turn back to the patient and break it down in plain language because it could be a bit overwhelming for them. And
I think that's good practice that we need to remember for everyone. It's not good to talk amongst yourselves. Your patients don't understand.
And I think another good thing is inviting the patient to see if they have any questions, because if they do, you could just clear it up there. And
great. Thank you. Shakira, is there anything we need to think about in terms of gender and men and women?
Yeah, so me as a young female, I'd prefer having a female doctor. Some of our older Aboriginal ladies, they wouldn't mind having a male or a female.
Okay, so we could just ask the patient what they prefer.
Yeah.
What about language? Because I know lots of Aboriginal people speak English as a second, third, fourth language. Can we use interpreters?
Yeah, I'd say always offer the patient interpreter. A lot of Aboriginal people, English is their second language, but they would prefer to have an interpreter if they can't speak English.
So I know it's really important that families get the information clearly. So an interpreter is something we can do. Is there anything else we can do to explain the health information in a way that the families can understand?
So a lot of Aboriginal people refer back to things like in nature. So when you're explaining like the lungs and the trees, they refer right back to it, and like using it as a broccoli.
Oh, broccoli is a good one.
Yep. Yeah.
So using metaphors and comparing to natural things.
Yes, yep.
Is it good to break the information up into little bits and check for understanding as you're going along?
Yeah, I'd do that. Break it and make it short and simple. And as you're going along, ask if they had questions about it, because by the time you finish, after talking a lot, they will forget about asking that question, because then they have so many questions to keep asking.
Okay. So chunks and ask for questions
along the way. As you go. Yeah.
So it's really just having a conversation.
Yeah, it is.
Having a yarn.
Yep.
Sometimes I notice there's some long pauses. Should I be jumping in or waiting?
No, I'd say wait, because a lot of Aboriginal people are trying to take in what you just said to them, and they probably have a question to ask you, but they're trying to think about the question they want to ask you and how to actually ask you the question.
Okay.
So don't rush them, just let them think, and then they'll come out with the question for you, and then you continue on.
Great. Thank you. Shakira, sometimes I worry that my Aboriginal patients might not trust me. Why is that, and what can I do to help?
Families might not trust you at the start. If you know Aboriginal history, then you'll know why. Just remember, like, hospitals can be scary for a lot of Aboriginal people. They're a long way from home. They even think, like, that's where a lot of scary things happen. So sometimes we might not trust hospitals. Our mob do have deep respect for doctors, and we might feel we can't ask questions to the doctors because they are experts.
Okay, so that's like you were saying before, it's really important to ask if they have any questions and to leave that space and pauses.
Yep.
Okay.
You can overcome this by being warm and caring, even yarning, like I explained before to you.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you. Shakira, sometimes when I talk with Aboriginal parents, I find it hard to get an accurate history, and I worry that they might not understand my questions or that they feel that I'm blaming them, that their child's sick. Do you have any tips for what I can do there?
You are right. Sometimes the families may feel shame that their child is sick and worry that the doctors might blame them. So first, just explain to the families, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions because I'm trying to find out what's really going on with Baba. That way they know why you're asking so many questions and trying to work out what's wrong with Baba, and you're not actually blaming them.
Okay, so it's a good way to frame it, is that you're asking your questions to solve the puzzle and help get Baba better.
Yeah.
Rather than just launching into lots of questions.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it a good idea to explain about lung health and talk about how the lungs work before you start asking questions about cough and things like that?
Yeah. So use things like pictures, or use the flip charts to parents and explain to them so they're more clear about what you're talking about.
And why I'm asking those questions.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even going through the flip chart and explaining to the parents what's going on with the lungs so they know why you're asking all these questions and you're trying to figure out what's really wrong.
That makes sense. Thank you so much, Shakira. It's been really helpful to talk to you and understand more about Aboriginal culture and how to engage with families.
Thank you.
I hope you liked the first part of the podcast and learnt some good ways to engage with Aboriginal families. In part two, we're going to be talking about chronic wet cough. I'm lucky to be joined by Associate Professor Andre Schultz. Andre is a paediatric respiratory physician from Perth Children's Hospital and will be talking to us about chronic wet cough in children.
Thanks, Nicola. Lovely to be here. And I'll admit I do love talking about chronic wet cough.
I've heard that's something you're really passionate about and a focus of your research. Why is this so important?
Well, Nicola, it's because a chronic wet cough in children often means there's something underlying going on, especially in Aboriginal children who we know are disproportionately affected by chronic lung disease.
Okay. So what are we looking for when we're looking for a chronic wet cough? How long does it need to be? Because children seem to cough a lot on and off.
Yes, you're right. So children, especially young children, tend to go to daycare where they get exposed to a myriad of different viruses. And these virus infections often cause cough, often wet cough, but the cough comes and goes. Usually, if it's a virus causing a respiratory infection, the cough should be gone by about 2 to 3 weeks. But if the cough remains after 4 weeks, then it's often a sign that it's not just a virus infection anymore. So we need to know exactly about duration. And a chronic wet cough in the pediatric setting means the cough's been there for 4 weeks or more.
Okay, so we're looking for a daily cough that's wet for at least 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's got to be daily, because if it comes and goes, then it might be these virus infections that kids pick up at daycare, for instance.
What else should we be looking for on history? Because I know that I'd be thinking about differentials like asthma.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, first thing, if a child presents with cough, you want to know about the duration, but you also want to know if the cough has been wet or dry. Because a dry cough have a very different etiology usually compared to a wet cough. If a cough is tight and associated with wheezing and shortness of breath, you're more likely to think of asthma. If a cough is barking in nature or seal-like, that's usually upper airway pathology, like group or chronic group. Ask about pattern and duration. So if it's consistently there for 4 weeks or more, it can be suggestive of protracted bacterial bronchitis. So a persistent wet cough that's there for 4 weeks or more is often caused by protracted bacterial bronchitis, especially and particularly if the cough responds to administration of antibiotics. Someone can drill down on that further. A cough that's there every time that an infant feeds is suggestive of aspiration. So you got to think of things like laryngeal cleft or tracheosuperior fistula or dysphagia. A cough that in a child that was healthy until they had a choking episode suggests there might be an inhaled foreign body. So that needs further investigation. Cough in association with wheeze and shortness of breath that comes and go is more typical of asthma. And asthma is certainly a cause of chronic wet cough, but far less so than protracted bacterial bronchitis. So one has to ask about previous medical history. So if a child has had recurrent or previous hospital admissions for chest infections, they also at risk for chronic disease or protracted bacterial bronchitis. And the birth history is important, especially if the child's been born prematurely or required oxygen administration after birth. One has to ask about family history. And remember to ask about environmental exposures at home. For instance, is the child being exposed to tobacco smoke? But remember, you might not want to ask about smoke exposure the very first time you meet the families, because the families might be a bit reluctant to talk about that, especially if they've just met you. So assess the situation and consider asking about that next time you see the family.
Okay. So thank you. That gives me a good structure for the history. You mentioned protracted bacterial bronchitis, and that's what I really wanted to learn more about today. Can you tell me what that is?
Well, protracted bacterial bronchitis is a chronic infection of the airway surface. I might just talk more about the airway surface. So we all inhale and exhale thousands of liters of air every day, and the air often contains little particles. Some might be noxious or even infectious. And the lung defense works beautifully because if we inhale those particles or even bugs, as the airway branches, these particles move with inertia, and sometimes it just doesn't make it around the bends of the airway branch. And then the particles get stuck on the mucus layer. And then the mucus gets moved upwards and outwards by the ciliary layer. And it works beautifully because you'll know the cilia are these small projections on the airway surface. They're about 8 microns tall, and they beat at about 12 hertz, 12 times per second. And they all beat in synchrony, like a big Mexican wave, except we call it the metachromatic wave. And it moves the mucus upwards and outwards at about 11 millimeters per minute. So the mucosary clearance, or the mucosary escalator, is a beautiful defense mechanism. But sometimes that defense mechanism can get compromised. And if it does get compromised, children are vulnerable to airway surface infection, typically with bacteria.
It is an amazing system. What sort of things might be going on for a child that would compromise that clearance?
Let's think about defense mechanisms. And of course, mucociliary clearance is a main defense mechanism of the lung. Defense can get overwhelmed by excessive insult, or they can get compromised. Now, if you think about compromise of mucociliary clearance, you've got to think about compromise of just lung defense. Firstly, if the cough reflex gets compromised for some reason, for instance, neurological condition, cerebral palsy, mucus might not be cleared as well as it otherwise would. Otherwise, if there's airway malacia, so when the airway walls are not as strong as they normally is, then as the pressure in the chest increases with coughing, the airways might flop closed, and that will compromise mucociliary clearance. Or if the cilia gets compromised, now the cilia can get compromised if there's a genetic condition called primary ciliary dyskinesia, where they just are not formed properly or don't beat as well as they should. But mucociliary clearance can also be compromised if the mucus on top is just too sticky and tenacious, like with cystic fibrosis. Other causes of compromise would be immune deficiency, like common variable immune deficiency or IgA deficiency. And of course, common variable immune deficiency is not that common, but it still should be on the differential diagnosis in a child with recurrent chest infections. So I mentioned primary ciliary dyskinesia, which is a genetic condition, but cilia can also be damaged by viral infections. We know from mice models infected with a coronavirus, but not the COVID-19, the cilia get destroyed by the virus infection. And the cilia it takes about 15 weeks for the cilia to recover. So if you think of a child hospitalized with bronchiolitis, those cilia can get damaged severely. So when they go home, it'll take weeks for those cilia to recover properly. And in that time, the child is vulnerable and will have impaired mucociliary clearance.
Okay, so it sounds like we need to be particularly conscious of those children we see in hospital for a bronchiolitis or a pneumonia. When they are discharged, they're more at risk of an infection of their airway surface.
Absolutely, Nicola. So they are very vulnerable, particularly if they go back to an environment where there's excessive insult to host defense. So I did speak about imbalance between host defense and insult. I think I elaborated a bit about defense, but let me talk a bit about the insult. So let's say that child who's now vulnerable goes home and there's excessive particulate exposure, like tobacco smoke exposure or dust exposure. And we know Australia is blessed with the most beautiful red dust in the world, but the red dust is, of course, full of iron, and bugs love iron, and actually also quite full of bacteria sometimes.
Okay. And if the child develops protracted bacterial bronchitis, what are the bugs that are involved?
The bug that is most involved with protracted bacterial bronchitis in children is non-typeable Haemophilus. So it's important that it's non-typeable, because if it was type B, of course, children can be vaccinated against that. But this is non-typeable Haemophilus.
So that is PBB. Where does bronchiectasis fit in?
Right. So if a child is vulnerable in terms of mucociliary clearance, like we discussed, and then contract a low-grade bacterial infection on the airway surface, let's say with non-typeable Haemophilus, then the infection causes inflammation, which perpetuates the airway surface damage and the ciliary damage, which then predisposes the child to ongoing infection and inflammation and more airway surface damage. And that's a vicious cycle that could eventually develop into widening of the bronchi, and that can be permanent, which would then be bronchiectasis.
Okay.
So the inflammation, of course, is associated with mucus secretion, and that mucus secretion is what causes the wet cough. And that's why we find chronic wet cough. And because it's a chronic infection, if we treat that with antibiotics and there's a response, that kind of is empirical evidence that there was an infection, because it improved with antibiotics. And that's why there's an internationally accepted definition. A child with a chronic wet cough, so wet cough of 4 weeks or more, in the absence of pointers to alternative causes, that responds to antibiotics is protracted bacterial bronchitis. Another way to make the diagnosis is with bronchoscopy and culture. We'll find Haemophilus, etc. But clearly that's not practical.
Mm.
So that's why we have this practical definition.
And that's a good definition because it involves treatment. And it sounds like to treat this condition can prevent chronic lung disease for these children.
Yes, we can prevent bronchiectasis. And of course, bronchiectasis in children has to be diagnosed by a CT chest. And on the CT, one will find widening of the bronchi. If it's detected early, bronchiectasis can still be reversed. That's not what we got taught many years ago because we still used x-rays to diagnose bronchiectasis. And by the time you can see it on an x-ray, the horse is well and truly bolted. But in diagnosing children with a CT, it can be diagnosed early and potentially reversed. But otherwise, it's a progressive condition that just keeps getting worse.
So it sounds like there's an opportunity here for GPs and hospital doctors to pick up this diagnosis and halt that progression to more long-term lung disease.
Yes, absolutely. The key there is to detect chronic wet cough as early as possible. So if a wet cough that's there for 4 weeks or more in the absence of other signs and symptoms, we should think of protective bacterial bronchitis. But unfortunately, protective bacterial bronchitis is often missed, and it can be missed for two reasons, underdiagnosis and misdiagnosis. These children are often misdiagnosed as having asthma. So remember, with asthma, you want typically shortness of breath, wheezing, plus minus atopic profile, triggers like exercise and responsive to inhaled salbutamol. But if it's just a chronic wet cough and nothing else is wrong, you have to think protective bacterial bronchitis. If that can be diagnosed and treated, we can prevent progression to bronchiectasis. But the diagnosis can be missed. And a big reason that it's missed is because chronic wet cough in children, in the absence of other signs and symptoms, are often just thought to be normal by parents and by doctors. So that's why diagnosis of bronchiectasis is often delayed by years to decades. And in one study conducted in Australia, in adults with bronchiectasis, 60% of the adults started having symptoms in childhood, but it was missed.
Okay, so that the message really needs to be that it's not normal to be coughing with a wet cough every day for more than a month, and that needs to be treated.
Absolutely. And the earlier we can treat it, the better. In one study of patients with bronchiectasis, the extent of the bronchiectasis correlated with how long the cough has been there before the diagnosis.
So this is really important.
Absolutely.
So is it that the longer the child is coughing for before they get treatment, the worse their lung disease could be?
Absolutely.
So why is it particularly important to pick up protracted bacterial bronchitis in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children?
Well, because Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children have of the highest rates of bronchiectasis in the world. They also have very high rates of hospitalisation for bronchiolitis and pneumonia compared to their other Australian peers. And we've discussed how that makes them vulnerable to developing protective bacterial bronchitis and bronchiectasis. In fact, about 1 in 5 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children will have bronchiectasis 2 years after being hospitalised for pneumonia or bronchiolitis. So it's really important for us as health practitioners to be well across their diagnosis and management of protective bacterial bronchitis, bronchiectasis, and particularly in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children.
Okay, so if I have a child who I'm suspecting PBB on history, what do I look for on exam?
Yes, okay, Nicola, so I'm glad you asked because, of course, the next step after your history is examination. So make sure the child has no failure to thrive. As paediatricians, we always weigh and measure the children. Check for digital clubbing. Do a chest examination, including auscultation. So if there's persistent crackles or focal crackles or wheeze, that might prompt you to do an x-ray or investigate that further. But certainly those signs would prompt you to investigate further or to refer on to a paediatrician.
Is there a role for a sputum sample?
Yes, absolutely. If a child is old enough to expectorate, one should send away a sputum sample for culture. But we often see protective bacterial bronchitis in younger children who are unable to expectorate. That's why the antibiotics specifically targeting Haemophilus is indicated.
Could a child with PBB have a normal examination?
Yes, yeah, if you don't find any of that, if their physical examination is normal, then you're most likely dealing with protective bacterial bronchitis or PBB, and we treat that with antibiotics. So an empirical course of 2 weeks of antibiotics. And because we're dealing with, typically with non-typical Haemophilus, most guidelines suggest amoxicillin clavulanic acid or azithromycin or cotrimoxazole. You can even use a second generation cephalosporin like gefuroxime. But we treat with 2 weeks of antibiotics. And that's important because this infection is entrenched. So we can't just give the usual 2 to 5 days. The next thing, which is very important, is to arrange follow-up after that 2 weeks. Now, if this was picked up early, then there's a good chance that a cough would have resolved by then. But if it's not resolved, one needs to give 2 more weeks of the same antibiotic to try to get rid of this infection. And then after the second 2 weeks, one has to do follow-up. If at that point in time the cough is still there, one needs to refer to a specialist because that child will typically need workup and they're at much higher risk of already having bronchiectasis.
Okay, so we need to treat for 2 weeks and make sure that the child's followed up to see if they need a further 2 weeks of treatment.
Yes, and look, I might just mention with prescription of antibiotics for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, antibiotics like amoxicillin clavulanic acid has to be kept in a refrigerator. So check if there's a refrigerator, especially if they live in a remote community or extreme remote community. And work with a parent to find out, you know, which regimen might work best for them. It could be that a twice a day prescription might be challenging if they have many other things going on in their lives and many other responsibilities. It might be that you want to liaise with the clinic and work out pragmatic ways to help the family administer the antibiotics to the children or to the child. I think it's really important at this point to just remind everyone about giving health information in a culturally secure way to families. Because if the family understand why the child needs the antibiotics, they will give the antibiotics. If they don't understand why they should be giving the antibiotics, it's less likely that they're going to give the antibiotics. So we go back to using a culturally secure approach, using health information flip charts that are appropriate, and making sure the families understand what's going on here. Again, if families know what they need to do to keep their children healthy, they'll do that much more likely than otherwise.
Absolutely. And I know that your group has put out some resources to help with that. Where do we access those?
Yes. Well, look, first, there's free online training modules that's accredited by RSAGP, available on Lung Foundation Australia, just on a culturally secure approach when it comes to pediatric Aboriginal lung health. But then their flip charts are available on the Telethon Kids Institute website, also on the Menzies School of Health Research website. And on the National Bronchiectasis Toolbox.
So to summarise your key messages today, a child with a daily wet cough for more than 4 weeks in the absence of another cause should be treated for protracted bacterial bronchitis to prevent long-term lung disease like bronchiectasis.
Yes, in the absence of pointers to alternative causes, one should prescribe 2 to 4 weeks of the appropriate antibiotics and follow up.
Is there an online resource that talks through the management?
Yes, there's various guidelines that all agree across Australia, depending on where you live. The National Cough Guidelines or CICADA guidelines cover this very well.
What are your take-home messages?
If a child has a wet cough for 4 weeks or more, in the absence of pointers to alternative causes, think protective bacterial bronchitis and know how to manage that. Secondly, be very familiar with a culturally secure approach when you work with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and there are resources available to get good training on that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.